Right on. We are continuing with our talks with people who have reversed their type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, healed their gut, and lost a lot of weight, and just became optimally healthy through diet, nutrition, and this more of a holistic way of life. And this one is a great conversation with Darla Hall. Darla Hall is a entrepreneur. She's a CrossFit coach. Just really, really went through some traumatic experiences as a child and overcame all that throughout her life to just become super active in the CrossFit world. And it changed her life as well as diet and eating the right things, and she did it gradually. So really hope you enjoy this podcast with Darla Hall. And hey, thanks Ron Garrett for introducing me to Darla. I really appreciate it. And if you don't know who Ron Garrett is, Ron Big Black Garrett, you can listen to a podcast with him several episodes ago. Just look it up on iTunes or Anchor or the other 8 places where you can find this podcast. But we're going to listen to it now. And sometimes the audio will go in and out. It's the best I could do with the audio that I'm having right now. We're in the process of changing a lot of things around because of audio issues. But I think you'll enjoy the podcast anyway. So have a listen. Right on. This is Jeffrey with Mountain Man Nutrition, and we have an awesome guest for the second time, because the first time didn't work out, and this is Darla Hall. Darla is a CrossFit trainer, a entrepreneur. She is amazing at storytelling, and she has a fantastic story to tell us. Welcome to Mountain Man Nutrition for the second time, Darla.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Again, we had some technical difficulties just for transparency on the first one last week. And so we have to re-record, which is great because I love talking to you anyway.
Well, good. But I hope it worked out well this time.
hopefully, too. I'm sure it will. It's all good. So, Darla, you have an amazing story to tell us about movement and some things that happened to you when you were a lot younger and how you overcame this. So you want to go ahead and start with a background in your story?
I'd love to. So I'm a big believer in, you know, I've all been taught this in one way or another, but, you know, that place of your greatest adversity is often can be the place of your purpose. And I love things like that. When you can stand, you know, like now I'm, my birthday's actually one weekend, so 36, crazy to think about.
Young and spry you are, young and spry. Happy birthday.
Yes. But, you know, standing here now, 36, and being look back at when I was 13, you know, like just over 20 years ago or whatever, and seeing, you know, even that that I know that now it's such a story. And and for me, I know I'm kind of and starting my old now even more I can and see myself and was, you know, when all this happened to me, it was when he at his age. And so it becomes even more real right now in this moment for me, because I see him and I'm like, wow, I can't believe, you know, all this that I'm about to tell you was like happened when I was his age. So so it's a lot more real right now, I feel like, lately, especially as I tell this story, because I don't know this before, but this is the first time I've ever told this story like in public. Like I've shared it on a person-to-person basis here and there, but I've never actually shared it you know, in front of a crowd or anything like that. So
well, thanks for getting out of yourself and doing that, because I think your story can help a lot of people.
Well, thank you. So I'll just go ahead and go back. So when I was young, and we're talking like not just, you know, a teenager, but, you know, young, like I've always been active and, you know, just kind of athletic. When I was you know, before 13, like I was already doing, you know, like cheerleader stuff at your little elementary school, but doing gymnastics, tumbling. And I just loved being active in that way. So, so that was, and of course, that was also like phones and stuff, and, you know, and ran around and played outside, stuff like that. So, so, you know, I was pretty active. But when I was 13, I was in a car accident with my mom. Somebody hit us head on. And I mean, it basically, which I didn't even say this last time, I mean, pretty much, it wasn't for, you know, a cop came on the scene and breathed for me until the helicopters got there. I mean, that would have been it for me if he wouldn't have been there. So, thank you to him a million times.
Yeah, thank you to police officers.
Yes. But it broke both of my legs, arm, head injuries, horrible head injuries, actually put me in a coma for about 9 days. There were so many things that happened in the hospital that were just miracles after miracle that my family just hit their knees. So many things that could have went wrong that it's just a miracle that I'm standing here. But I did come out of that with minuscule things wrong with, you know, at the moment. But I did have to learn how to walk again. My legs, they're broken at the feet. So you know, I didn't realize at the time in the hospital, but they were very broken. And some of my memories kind of spotty in the hospital, but some of the memories I do have was like I could recall like laying in the bed and being able to move my legs when people were telling me they were broken. I was like, I don't understand. You know, I'd bend my knees and, you know, stuff like that. So it just wasn't, you know, computing. And then time, and I have to again because this is one of the memories that were so vivid to me. It was the first time they got me up, like to let me walk to the bathroom by myself. I had those hospital socks on, and they like, helped me stand up. And then they were like, "Okay, like come down to me, like take your first step." And I couldn't control my legs. My legs just started, and I couldn't stop them. It's like I had no control. And like I still, like I remember what that felt like. Which leads me into what I've had to deal with in my life was from that moment on, being a 13-year-old, I was scared to death that I was fragile. You know, like I didn't want, no matter what happened, I didn't want to re-hurt myself. Even though there's a lot of things I don't remember pain-wise, like I don't remember the car accident. You know, I don't remember. There's just a lot of things I don't remember. but as far as like the recovery part of it, I was just scared. And I honestly don't think I realized how bad it was until I was older. But, you know, being a 13-year-old who was tumbling and, you know, working on backflips and stuff like that. Now, like I was scared to cartwheel. I was scared to get on my bicycle. So it literally like where I was super active. And now all of a sudden I'm like, I don't want to do anything.
Yeah. That's super emotional and physical trauma. It just really stopped you in life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I carried that. I mean, just imagine being a teenager. And of course, like I know, like I've always had this competitive drive inside of me. Like I feel like I would have just loved team sports so much. But in that time where I would do that kind of stuff, I couldn't do it. I remember trying out for, you know, the volleyball team and making the team and going to practice and seeing like, you know, the running and like, you know, all the back and forth that you would do with volleyball. So I was just, and I dropped out. I couldn't do it. And honestly, like when I think back, I try to put myself in my mom's shoes too, because she does remember the car accident. She remembers all of it. She didn't have the kind of injuries that I had. Was very direct happened. you know, when I was in there, like, she saw and remembers all that. So I know that, like, she was scared to push me to do things because I know that she didn't want me to be hurt too.
Yeah.
And honestly, right now, like, remember, I told you I'm about to be 36. Like, she still sees what I do in the gym now and, like, freaks out. Oh, my gosh, you're going to do that. But at the moment, like, she didn't really push me to do things that, you know, I know she was scared, too, I'm sure. You know, because there was so much unknowns, and I had a couple of moments here and there. Like, I remember being in school and walking down these steps, and, like, something in my, like, in my knee shifted. And it kind of made me fall. And I'm sure it was all related to, you know, injuries. Still, like, it was, like, just enough to keep me scared. Because that was probably, you know, that might have been a year after the car accident or something. But it was, like, little things like that that would happen. It was just, like, reminders of, like, hey, oh, you better not do too much.
Yeah.
And, you know, things that I'm like, oh, my God. But so anyway, and that carried on into my 20s, sadly, which is also about the time, like, I guess I was probably 17 when I met my husband. And we, let's see, before we got married, he just kind of started of this. I started realizing how bad I had gotten and in kind of digging out of that hole.
Yeah, so your husband just, or even before he was your husband, he just knew that he could motivate you to get out?
Yes. Well, and I know, like, he saw the me that I am now. Like, I knew all of that was in there because I did have a drive. I was just, like, wanted to get things done. There were so many things. Anyway, I know he saw that. And so, but he is such a patient man, and he is so, like, careful with me, and he's been that way with me since the beginning. And I still need that. I told you before, like, I'm, like, super sensitive. Like, I cry for any emotion. I mean, and it's not like, I mean, not like sobbing out of control, but, like, it's just how emotion. And so, you know, like, I respond to, you know, words, like, you know, I just feel things deeply. You know, I'm totally going to be the one crying in some kind of stupid commercial that, you know, whatever. So, but anyway, but I've always been that way. It's part of who I am. And he's always been sensitive of how to speak to me and how to, you know, push me, but not push me too hard. Like, the point of, like, you know, he's never had to be mean or stern with it, but, you know, he gently prodded me along. So it was with him that I remember getting back on a bicycle again and trying to just ride around the neighborhood, you know, stuff like that. I have to tell this story. I told you the first time. I have to fit in it again because it's so funny to me that I literally can't remember it. But sometimes I think this is maybe a little bit from the car accident because I haven't really had any my head injury. I do think occasionally I have a little bit of, like, spotty memory loss because there are some memories that I'm like, I don't remember any of that. And one of those, but also a bit super traumatic for me. I get out. But he took me on, like, a little hike near where we live. He used to go and explore this cave with his friends that was pretty close by, and he wanted to take me in and see this cave. And he said it wasn't, like, a bad hike or anything, you know, not hard or strenuous or whatever. We were just field this little trail for this cave. And he said that I suddenly halfway there just busted out crying and was, like, heaving for air. Like, I can't do it. I can't make it. Like, you go leave me here.
You can laugh about it now.
I know.
But then it had to be traumatic, right?
No, I mean,
stuff was coming back.
Exactly. And honestly, like, when I think, I've tried to remember it. Why can't, like, I can't recall it, but I'm sure that I was crazy. I was even there and didn't think I could make it. B, like, we live in the country. We are in, like, deep Alabama here. Like, I'm sure that I was also terrified that there could be snakes anywhere. That was You know, it's thing that's going on in my head. But, I mean, but anyway, it's about it now because I've done crazy things since I've been a CrossFitter and made all these fit friends. Like, we've done crazy things together as far as like, I've done some major hiking trips where I've carried a 50-pound pack, done elevation, and I mean, all these things that I would never imagine in a million years that I could ever do.
Yeah.
And so now it makes that even more special, even though I
don't remember it.
Right? But Daniel knows it very well, so he, like, it's always fun to hear him talk about it, because, I mean, I'm sure he was completely baffled, like, and he's 2 years younger than me, so at the time, pretty young, not so I was we were just babies, so imagine at that time, I'm pretty sure that was before we were married, so he was probably, you know, 17 or 18, I don't know, like being like, what in the world?
Well, what was your first step into like really exercising and deciding that, you know, you wanted to do something for yourself and for your body?
Okay, so in my 20s, early to mid 20s, I had friends that were really into running. And so this was kind of like my entry into being more active. They were like, you know, let's run, you know, we'll sign up for a 5K and, you know, just let's get together and start doing stuff. And at the time, like, I mean, imagine, let's go back to the hiking story. Like, I was heaving, like walking on a grass trail. I could not run, jog or whatever for 30 seconds. So anyway, I got one of those 5K things. I was like, I can do this, you know, it eases you in. So that's what I did. I did a couch to 5K, and then I might have done it, you know, more than once, but I just started kind of and doing the best I could, which was really big just for my legs. I felt, you know, I mean, I'm still dealing with this feeling of like, oh, I'm going to put too much stress on my legs. You know, that was just always in the back of my mind. So, but I kept going, I kept doing it. And I got to where I was finally running pretty regularly, maybe like 4 times a week, and then doing a long run on the weekends. Now, not sprinting or anything, but not like walk running. I mean, I was actually just jogging, trying to find a comfortable pace and just going for a long time. So, so that was huge for me.
And you were pretty heavy at that time still. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So this whole time, which by this time I already had 2 kids. So, but I was always the same weight. I was around 90 to 200 pounds most of my adult life. Every time I gained weight when I was pregnant, but for the most part, like, I just kind of went back down to like the same spot. It's like my body was really comfy there for whatever reason. So even when I started running, I dropped a bit. I was more like 190, but it's just normal. It's like my body used to it. And I decided to sign up for a half marathon because, you know, that kind of feels like a bucket list kind of thing. And so I did that when I was 27, 28, somewhere right in there. And yeah. And I was 190 pounds when I ran the half marathon. So wow.
What was your nutrition like? What were you eating at that point?
So that was normal. Everybody else would think it pretty healthy. I was not eating like a bunch of junk. I was doing like, I mean, the standard American diet or what you hear. I grew up with a mom that was always we probably all did.
You know, I think we all did. Yeah.
Everybody was like, hey, no fat and, you know, low calories. So that was kind of how I approached everything. You know, I was like, eat, you know, whole grain bread with some turkey and, you know, a salad. And so it was like regular, you know, and I was just trying not to eat junk. And I know that I was successful all the time with the no junk thing. But part, like, I knew how to make health is better than the way I was taught. Right. That's the key right there.
The way you were taught is,
yes,
the key. That's right.
Yes, because I mean, I could be like, well, I'm doing what they told me to do, but who's telling you to do that? And what is that based on? So, but that's, so that's how I ate at that time. It's like every time I had this, like I keep telling you, I had this drive to like do better, but I felt like every time I did something, you know, like I was really all in on working out, it's like I would gain weight. Of course, now I know I put on muscle really well. And, but of course, at the time, you know, you're telling yourself like, maybe it's just muscle. I mean, it weighs more than fat does. You know, all will tell you, you know, you're trying to tell yourself like, maybe that's how, but it was really happening when I felt like I couldn't get all the pieces to fit together to like get this extra fat off. And I feel like I should weigh less. I should be better. But I was like, I couldn't figure out how to make all the pieces fit. Yeah. So
it's crazy. You're running half marathons and you're, you know, still eating. And it just goes back to the same old saying is you cannot exercise yourself out of a crappy diet.
Exactly. And, you know, and I don't really think I had a clue that that was such a puzzle at the moment. But after I did the running and I did the half marathon, I was like, okay, well, I did that. I ran, so now it's you kind of get bored with, or I get bored with stuff. And even more importantly, I am a people. I thrive being with people. So getting out running by myself every day as my only form of exercise, I mean, some people think it's therapeutic, and I agree for the most part. Like, I could be with people, you know. I need people beside me working out with me. Yes.
Yeah. You need that teamwork, motivation.
Yes.
Camaraderie, like connection.
Yes. I mean, which, and I think we all need that. Like, I think that's the difference maker 9 out of 10 times. That's always going to be the difference maker. So finally, at the ripe old age of 31, I found myself in a CrossFit box. I walked in and did like the foundation, the fundamentals class that they had there, and I knew almost immediately walking in that door and in that first class that like that body was made for. And I knew also, because I've always had this passion to help people, like for fitness and nutrition, couldn't figure out everything for myself. I knew that something that, I mean, it was just a passion inside of me. I was like, how in the world can I help people if I can't find the way myself? And so that's why I'd never pursued anything, because I can't do that. I find myself. And as soon as I walked in that CrossFit box, I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And this is what I want. This is the vehicle that I will use to train and help people. One facet anyway, that will get me in there. So
yeah. It's just, you just had this innate intelligence that you knew this is exactly what you wanted. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, it's been amazing. I don't know. It's been such a life changing thing. And one of the biggest things, and we'll go back to me being a crier is, as I got in the gym, it was physical things did happen, but it was the mental things that happened. Like when I went so hard that I didn't think that my body could really go anymore, and I would quit or I would stop. I'm not going to say quit. I would stop and I would literally like cry in the middle of a workout, and you know, not like dramatically or anything, but I mean, like the tears would come and I would have to physically like, okay, I can do this. Body can do more than I think it can do. Like my mind is, I mean, you know, like everything is like, you can't do this, but I would just keep going. And so my mantra kind of became like, you can cry, but you can't quit.
So, all right. Great mantra.
Yes. Yes. And it's still like, I don't cry as much in the gym anymore, but it really happened. If I like, I know it's so, I can imagine the rolling eyes right now if you're listening, but like when I don't hit a lift, sometimes I get really agitated at myself and tears may fall. But if you any of the girls or my coach, like, they wouldn't think anything of you saying something about me crying in the gym. They've all seen it.
Yeah. So just take us back to that first day when you walked into that CrossFit gym and you really knew, like, this is what you want to do. So, and I want you to tell a little bit about this, because there's a lot of people out there, you know, you were 190, 180 pounds, 200 pounds, something like that, walking into a CrossFit gym as a woman, and probably, you know, maybe some self-confidence issues or whatever you were going through. Kind of tell a little bit about that and what that was like and how it was for you, for someone else that's way overweight, that's, you know, not real confident that, that this story could inspire to get them into the CrossFit gym.
Yes.
What happened to you on that first day?
Well, I was about 200 pounds, and I remember there were several, which when you go into a CrossFit gym, the first thing, like, you can visit any class, I'm sure CrossFit gyms are the same, like, hours, so anybody can come and drop in, but when you really, like, really find out about CrossFit, everybody has, like, a foundations class or a fundamentals class where they basically take you and they tell you, you know, what CrossFit is, what's it about, like, I mean, you know, we cover all the things like basic nutrition and stuff like that, but they also go over like the fundamental movements that we use a lot. So, you know, the first night in our class, we hit the squat, you know, the air squat, and, you know, look at everybody's form and talk about the proper way to do that, and, you know, like some basic movements. And so, and there was one, probably not the first night, because I remember this was a couple of months later or something like that, but having pain from the rig, and we were just practicing like knee raises or something. So just hanging from the rig, like holding your weight and just lifting your knees up. And I remember I could barely do that, which, you know, it's good for me to say this out loud, because now I get so caught up, because there's so many things that I do on a daily basis now that I just forget, like, I couldn't do them at all when I started. And I in this conversation, a lot of people who are so intimidated to walk into our gym feel like they need to be fit before they can do CrossFit. And that's the complete opposite. Like, we want you to come in, like, everything can be for anybody. And so our goal is to be able to cater to all different types of people and athletes. So I should be able to have somebody over here who can do every movement as prescribed on the board, and then have people over here who might not can do anything as written on the board. And I have to help them, like, get the movement that's right for them. You know, like, it's relative, like, everybody's going to get a great workout, but everybody's bodies are different, and you can be doing something and be doing something different. Both, like, the goal is like, die.
Right. You're both doing it.
Yeah, you're both doing stuff, and the goal is to work out, and when you're done, to feel like you laid it all out on the floor and you have nothing else to give.
Yeah, it's like, if you can do 50 burpees or 4 burpees and you're both exhausted, there's no difference except for time. You know, the point is,
that's the win.
Exhausted, you put yourself through that.
Exactly. You know,
momentum. Yeah.
Yes. And the key to making me feel, because I mean, you're going to go in there and you're going to be like, because, you know, everybody, that whole unknown thing makes people nervous about, I don't know what this is going to be like. You know, what is that? What's going to happen? And I think it's just natural to feel that way. But like, what made it so is, and that's, and this goes across the board for CrossFit, but even not just CrossFit, like any kind of group side, like, you start working at the people, like, you form relationships, and they start being the reason why you go, until you've developed that discipline that you need, you know, to get yourself there. So there's still days, hey, I've been doing this 4 years now, or 4 years, and there's still days that I wake up and I'm like, I do not want to go and work out today.
Right.
I mean, but ultimately, like, I get up and I put my shoes on and I and my body will get on board, but what keeps me going is I want to spend my part of my day with those people. Like, they're the ones that kept me going when I didn't think I could. Like, it happens every time I talk to them because I mean, like, they were different. You know, coach that called me, he saw in me for sure that I wasn't sure I had, and just wouldn't let up. Like, he just would not let up. And I mean, the reason that I look the way I look right now is because of him. You know.
So how did you transition from doing CrossFit and being, you know, overweight and eating a standard American diet or some version of it to really getting into the ketogenic diet or low carb diet?
Yes.
And really transforming yourself through diet?
Yes. Okay. Initially, I was a year in. And so my performance was getting better. And, you know, and I had gone through, just do like challenges throughout our gym, like, you know, whether you do paleo or, you know, however, you know, there's people who do zone, people who do paleo. So we, you know, we had a challenge and I did one of those and I tried the paleo thing. But my coach kind of grabbed me one day and he was like, hey, he was like, you're doing amazing in the gym. We really need to lock in on this nutrition thing. He was like, I will tell you exactly what to do. And if you do it, it will work. So the way that we started was actually, so it was a 30% fat, 30% protein, 40% carb. So this is how I started. And I was super strict with it at first. Cause he was like, if you'll do it exactly like this and be super strict, he was like, you won't have to be that strict forever. But we need to, this is going to get you to goal, you know, the best way, like the quickest way, which wasn't like quick, you know, he was like, this is what we're going to do. So,
right. And it's interesting real quick is because that's really not a low carb diet, mm-mm. but it's a way to set the stage for eating the healthy fats and bringing in the carbohydrates that are healthy and are, you know, the leafy greens mm-hmm. and things like that, and to get a consistent way of eating before you taper down and fall into it. Like, yeah. I really coach a lot of people, you know, to add things first and then other things kind of go yes. away. And it's a slow progression. Some people can just jump right in and go keto and be, you know, kicking out ketones in a week.
Mm-hmm.
Other people, you know, it might take 3 months I think that was a problem with the Atkins diet is they try to kick people into it right away. And if you're sugar addicted or carb addicted, uh-huh. you can really struggle and have a lot of issues and digestive issues and a lot of things. If yeah. you don't taper down and move into it slowly, some people can do it. Most can't.
Yeah. And it was a really good primer for me because I was, even the way that I was eating very clean. So the only carbs I had that weren't like fruits and vegetables and were like oats. I didn't really do any like bread or anything. So I was already kind of getting all that stuff out of the way. So when I was ready to do keto, I didn't have any kind of keto flu stuff because I had already got all that, the sugar stuff was already
right.
But anyway, so I did the marketing. I was really strict and everything he said, it worked just like he said it would. And so that I started in October and it took me almost all of October to kind of get used to measuring because I had never measured food or, you know, any of that. So I had gotten used to being pretty specific with everything I put in my mouth. So October, I was kind of like stressed out. And I forgot to mention this earlier, but this is a perfect place to throw it in. Like my whole life, as long as I can remember, I've been, and I said this last time, an overachiever, because I feel like that says better than to say perfectionist. But, and that's always kind of been an issue that can be a good, like in it, as far as striving for excellence. But in the bad side, it's never good enough. Which that's something I deal with all the time, but
right, me, you and me both, not good
yes,
enough.
Yes,
unlovable.
But, so, like, with you know, when you're trying to do food stuff, like I took that into that. Like I wanted the checklist. I'm like, tell me what to do. And if all these things, then I want the result that you're telling me that is going to happen. And so that's exactly what happened. It took me a little while to get used to, you know, but I did this through the holidays. I kept telling myself, this is one set of holidays. I'm going to stick to plan. I'll prepare things that I can take to gatherings or whatever. That's not going to, you know, blow everything. And so by January, February, like I was, you know, I was down to 160. I was down from my start weight there at 200 pounds. So, which was very weird for me. I thought if I had got to, and we actually looked up before I joined CrossFit, I had joined the other gym and I think my body fat was like around 32 or something. And I was down to like 18 at that point. When I had lost all that weight, the only downside to that whole scenario was I was hungry all the time. I mean, I had food on me at all times. and it's not like that's a horrible. I was just hungry all the time. Like, yeah. I couldn't ever get, yeah, like, satisfied. You know, tells you, oh, your metabolism is just fired up and it's working so well. And I'm like, well, whatever. But I'm just saying, I'm hungry all the time.
No, it's actually because you're still burning sugar.
Yeah, and it keeps wanting more, and it wants all, yep, of them. But so by the time I got to that point, which my performance was awesome, everything was going really great. But my coach had been doing keto for a point, and he just kind of approached me. And, you know, like at this point, I started training. I got, I started training 2 years after I was actually doing CrossFit. And started training. So now, you know, I've been at my gym as a trainer for 2 years or a little over 2 years. So my coach has always treated me like he knew I wanted to train. So even in a class scenario, he'd ask me questions like as pertaining to athletes to kind of test me on my knowledge. And we would kind of experiment with each other as far as like how we're eating and what we're doing. And so he's always been really good about helping me learn in that way. So anyway, it's nothing for him to be like, so I've been trying this keto thing. And but anyway, so he approached me and he was like, hey, I think that you would really thrive on keto. He was like, I think that it will really push your performance to the next level. He was like, you'll die first. He was like, it'll hit hard in the gym. He was like, but if we just stay consistent and keep climbing and look at the big picture, he was like, I think it will be incredible for you.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about that because of the dying first. and that's if you're hitting it super hard. There's a transition between becoming a sugar burner and becoming a fat burner. Mm-hmm. And it takes a little while sometimes to develop. A lot of times you can work on your digestion and your gallbladder and different things and give yourself supplements to speed that up so your body can upregulate the fat in the fatty acids better and to kick out more ketones to develop that. But for a lot of people who aren't specifically working that on that or working with a nutritional therapist or something like that, mm-hmm, to really fast forward that, if you're just kind of trying to do it just with a diet, you can lose a lot of like strength or endurance. Mm-hmm. And this conversation is really from my brother because he won't transition and he's a CrossFitter because he suffers in the gym. He doesn't have as good workout. He dies. He doesn't have as much strength because he won't allow himself that time.
Yes.
You know, and it's either back down on your workout and don't kill yourself as hard or fight through it for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, whatever it's going to take your individual self to fight through it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was super interesting because, you know, I'd already lost most of my really close to goal. So when I switched to keto, it was less about, you know, losing all this weight. It was more about, you know, I mean, honestly, like we were just like, okay, so I've been in the gym like consistently every day. So we're going to be able to see exactly what happens.
Right.
And so as soon as I started and we went off like pretty strict, from the get go. So, I mean, I was getting probably less than 10 carbs in the beginning for sure. I started out with like a fast, I think on the first day, and anyway, and jumped right in. So about a week in, like I was still feeling somewhat for a few days, and then all of a sudden, like warm up, like I was like gasping for air in the warm up, and I was like, oh no. and so that was early on, and then it did not take long at all to notice that my strength was like suffering. So the part I got better quicker. I was really good before at like quick burners, like a real fast workout. You know, occasionally there'll be like a 10-minute workout or something where you just go. It's like a sprint, and there might be a barbell involved, or there might not be. But, you know, sometimes there will be workouts where you go as hard as you can, short amount of time. And that used to be like my jam, but all of a sudden, it's like the shorter things were like way harder. And I was like, oh gosh. And that was kind of hit me just in my mind first. I was like, oh no, like, you know, this is not going to work. I don't know if I can do this. But over time, I started realizing the more, like, I mean, especially by the time I was, like, definitely fat adapted, it still kind of stuck out in that first part of it. But once I just kept pushing, then all of a sudden, I could pace for a long time. Like, I pay attention to that now still. That if there's like a longer workout, a lot of times we'll do things. And if there's a way that I can easily keep up with like my split times and stuff, I'll notice like I can still really pace well and hold like a same pace for every round or something like that. And that's just, you know, I guess a nerd thing to do <Right. laughs> just for me, because it makes me feel like I'm still, you know, I'm doing what I want to do. Like, I'm holding pace, because sometimes I still gym, like I feel like I'm not where I want to be. Like right now, like I just came through a I'm gonna say kind of like a rest period. I had to kind of step back a little bit and not be so rigid, because I was feeling stressed about my food and stressed about my workouts, which is crazy. But yes, remember, high achiever, just whatever you want to call it. I was getting to the point that I was feeling like all the was doing was like not getting through because I was stressing about those things.
Yeah, it can actually, yes. If you don't relax about it or pay attention or let yourself just relax, it could just add stress to your life. And that's,
I know, which is crazy. And so yeah. Now back on to back to like a strict keto, because I felt like I was in a better place. I really just got just overwhelmed with stress. And that's something that I know I have to deal with, you know, on a daily basis, just to make sure that I'm keeping my mind right. And I did a post the other day about this, and I just be super vulnerable with people, because I think that's the thing that we like these days. Everybody's trying to cover up or, but like there's strength and vulnerability.
Yeah.
And
I really like talking about the tough stuff and the vulnerable stuff and the problems that we have. And that's why I always say, you know, like this, the first recording we made messed up, you know, and that's okay. Cause that kind of stuff happens, and it happens a lot to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you just have to roll with it.
you know, some people like 6 months into being keto eat half a chocolate cake. You know what I mean? Like it's real stuff that really happens. Yes. And it's okay. Cause it's not like you start over. You just, you know, keep continuing the next day.
You just have to.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you just have to shake it off. And sometimes it's hard. Especially if you have a personality like mine, I'm like that all or nothing. And you feel like, well, now I messed up everything. I might as well not do anything because I've, right. You know, I'm not perfect anymore. And
yeah, you can't pendulum swing like that. It can't be mm-hmm. all or nothing. It's got to yeah. be something in the middle. And I really coach my clients on meditation in utilizing meditation to separate from the thoughts and feelings to the present moment. And then you could watch that mental process just go by and not go down the rabbit hole with it. And I also tell them, like, hey, being on the scale, especially early, once a month is enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, checking your blood glucose at first, you know, several times a day, especially on your, if you're on something like a glucobalance or something like that, so you don't want to go too low. But later on, after you understand and you're in a rhythm, you don't need to. You don't need to check your ketones every day after mm-hmm. you know a baseline and you know how you feel. You just go off by how you feel. Because if you're stressing over being a 0.5 on a ketone meter or a 1.5, you're just adding stress that yeah. it doesn't need to happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's silly.
Yeah. And on the note, which we didn't talk about this last time, the whole time that I've been ketogenic, so my year, I did test my ketones often, especially in the beginning, because we were, like I said, we were gathering data and just kind of paying attention. But I think the highest my ketones ever were that I know of was like 2.5 maybe one time. And I think I was coming off of some thing, and but for the most part, being an active athlete, the way that I work out, like my ketones were average more like between 0.4 and 0.7.
Yeah.
Like they weren't, and I was getting so frustrated because everybody was like, oh, your ketones need to be between 0.5 and 5 or whatever it was. And I'm like, why can't my ketones get higher? And I would tell these people or research and see all these and everybody's ketones are so high. And so then I was like, why am I so low? And because, you know, I felt like I was doing all checking on boxes and I just couldn't make everything line up. And, you know, and even now, like, I feel like everybody's, if you do this and you eat this much carbs and you're going to be all cut and ripped and, you know, and I'm like, I still, head section is still area. Like, I feel like I can't get as lean as like everybody else yeah. does.
I think the ketone thing is actually a ridiculous conversation because after you get fat adapted, your muscles stop using ketones anyway. They go right and revert to the fatty acids. And then the only thing that uses ketones after a while is your brain
mm-hmm.
because your body goes, okay, these ketones are valuable. My liver's producing them. We don't need to produce as many because we could just use fatty acids for the rest of it. And then the brain, because it's so important, in it comes first and everything, the heart and brain and your body, everything else is shut down. Your brain is the only thing using ketones after a while.
Mm-hmm.
So having a 4.5 or a 3.5 ketone range after 2 or 3 years in ketosis seems cool, but you're not even going to utilize
the yeah.
ketones because your brain can't utilize all those.
Yeah.
Your muscles are just using fat.
Yeah. Oh, and I do want, we rabbit trot a little bit and miraculously I remembered where we were going. So let's go back to CrossFit one, like real quick. So after about 3 or 4 months, I think that's about what it took me before I got back where my strength was and started to make some gains at that point. So to anybody who works out regularly and haven't switched over to keto or they haven't because they're nervous about all that kind of thing, going back to what we said before, and the thing that my coach told me was like, we had to focus on the long game.
That's so right.
It was going to be hard. And we knew I was going to, you know, feel weak and I was going to have to really just keep going to the gym and doing what I knew to do and just keep pressing no matter what. And then eventually I would get back to where I was and then we would slowly start climbing higher. So I did get to where, I could pick up more lift, you know, and we're not talking about like crazy PRs, like, I mean, because you still have to work for that. I mean, you have to put in the work to get, you know, to lift heavier weight no matter what you're doing. But like, it did go up. But I think the best thing for me, like, I mean, I love being strong and all that, but the best thing for me is just even being able to, like, the endurance that comes with it in those longer workouts. Because I mean, it was just amazing, you know, that I felt like I could go and like still have energy to keep going. Something that we didn't talk about this in my first conversation, but we went to Hawaii this summer for like our anniversary trip, which was like a dream come true, but we don't even have time to get into all that. But something I did notice on the trip is we made it a point to, like, surfing was one of our big things that we wanted to do. And we did that a lot.
Right.
And that we were great at it. There were several days that we would go out and spend, you know, like 3 or 4 hours. But I noticed on one of the days that, like, Daniel kind of petered out before I did. And I just never felt, even though I was like, I mean, my arms were tired from paddling so much and it made you feel like, especially like, so I'm like, I should be good at this. I'm better than this. And it was, but I did notice that I wasn't like tired. And, you know, I wasn't like all huffing and out of breath all the time. Like I could just go and keep going.
That's awesome.
And I did, it's not something I noticed until he was like, I'm really tired, you know, where I'm like, I'm not really tired at all.
It's profound when you really recognize that you're living inside your dream.
Yeah. So you know that was super awesome.
I love this conversation about the long game because it's one of the most important things that I coach. And you've been working on this 4 or 5 years to really produce these kind of results. And I tell my clients, the people who are, you know, type 2 diabetics and insulin resistance and overweight, like, you didn't become this way in, you know, 2 years or a year or 6 months. You know, it took you 10, 20, 30 years, even with digestive issues and leaky gut and dysbiosis and things like this. Like, this is a long game. When you come in for healing and you change your lifestyle and you change your diet, you know, you can't look at it on a daily basis. You have to play for the long game, which if you play a bigger game and a long game, the little setbacks and the little things do not affect you as much. So you can go 2-3 months without lifting as heavy or being as fast or whatever. Your thing is to, these things don't bug you as much because you're playing that bigger game.
Yeah.
And that's super, super important. Real quick, tell these guys, what you, eat on a daily basis.
Okay. So most morning I have coffee. That's like my pre-workout. I don't do like butter and all the things in it, but I do, which I did, I forgot to say this last time and I was like, but I do a scoop of collagen. Unflavored collagen, and then 1 tablespoon of tea and some. So that is my coffee in the morning. Unless I'm doing complete fast, I do try to do that at least once a week, like a 24-hour. Most of the time, that's like Sunday night after dinner to like Monday dinner or whatever, something like that. But so my coffee in the morning and usually like late lunch. So like I haven't today, so I'll probably eat about 1:30. My favorite meal to have, and I will eat this any time of the day, is to have like maybe 3 eggs and a few slices of bacon with like about 2 ounces of avocado.
Woot woot.
Yes, that is my favorite meal all the time. I would literally eat that all the time. But and then supper, I have a husband and 2 kids. 2 boys, they're 11 and 13. When I cook, I try to, I do not cook like separate meals for myself or whatever. And I try to, they all try to eat pretty healthy. They're not full keto, but they do kind of move toward the low carbs. So I may do like burgers, you know, everybody loves burgers. So I'll lettuce wrap and I also kind of add into my meal prep, so I'll cook a lot of burgers that way we can eat and then I can put them in the fridge so we can eat on them, you know, beyond that one night. So we do burgers a lot, you know, of course, like some kind of taco night. I mean, I like a simple, like I don't do a whole lot of recipes, like maybe it's lazy or maybe it's, I mean, I do like to like bake and cook things and try little special treats every now and then. But for the most part, we're just pretty simple. I try to remember I said, like, I tend to get a little stressed out if I don't kind of be intentional with my time and plan ahead. So having a family with sports and kinds of things going, like, I have to like a general meal plan the first of the week. So it's not detailed, but I'll put, you know, what I'm preparing for dinner every night so that for me, I don't have to think about that. I know I have the food that I need to prepare. This is what's on the list. So tonight I'm going to make, you know, it's going to be taco night or, you know, those.
I love taco salad night.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's basically what we do.
Yeah. We're running a little bit out of time. So I want you to give our listeners one takeaway. If you can tell them one thing that's super, super important, what's the main takeaway that you want listeners to get today?
I think ultimately, and I just try to carry this in all that I do, is just break the perfect off of you. Like, I think that we get into this whole comparison game. We have ideas of what it looks like to be the perfect athlete or, you know, the perfect of like a fit body or whatever. And we get so lost in trying to be somebody or something else that we discount like what we bring to the table. And I think for me, especially like I told you, being vulnerable and just letting it all hang out. I mean, just letting people see my weaknesses, that there's strength in that, because now like there's people who need to see that. And there's people that need to see like the full authentic you. And if you're always hiding that, then it's like there's some people that need to see that never see it because you're always covering it up. That connection happens. That's where, you know, I feel like your greatest change can happen is when you have people around you who love you for who you are. And, you know, that's a beautiful thing that happened for me in the gym. Like I walked around, you know, like never wore makeup, never, you know, they saw like probably the messiest version of me and they still love me. And that was, so
awesome. Awesome. Great tip. Thank you very much for that. So you have a course coming up that you've created, and you also have a t-shirt or a clothing line company.
Yeah.
If these people are interested in getting to know you more and seeing what you got going on, how do they get a hold of you?
Yes. My website is darlahall.com, which maybe you can put that in the show notes or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I have a retreat coming up. I've been planning this one. Actually, it's my first one in Huntsville, but I am looking to do other things. But anyway, this is just a little retreat that I'm going to do where I have 10 to 20 women. So this one's women only. And we are going to spend 7 hours together. We're going to sweat. We're going to learn about healthy nutrition. We're going to talk about how to be the strongest version of ourselves, strong body, strong mind, strong spirit. And remember, strong is not just physical strength, but how to be mentally strong, how to, you know, be vulnerable and take care of ourselves and how to be, you know, work on passion projects, make time for things that make us feel fulfilled. And so that's what I've been doing lately. And anybody follow me on Instagram or Facebook, Darla Hall, D-A-R-L-A-H-A-L-L, pretty easy to find. So I would love to hear from anybody who's interested in connecting. And yeah,
awesome, Darla. Thank you. Thanks. Tell Ron Garrett,
yes,
thank you for the introduction. Love you, Ron. And you know, a lot of people don't know, but my people are from Alabama. I actually moved down there for about a year and a half and got back to my roots and met my, yes, cousins again. And I love Alabama, and I always say living in the South forces you to become a nicer person.
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, thanks for being on Mountain Man Nutrition, and good wishes to you.
Thank you for having me.
Have a great day.
All right. You too.
Hey, this is Jeffrey with Mountain Man Nutrition again. And if you like the podcast you just heard, tell a friend. Share it on Facebook, share it on Instagram, share it on Twitter, wherever you can share it, tell somebody who can benefit from it, because that's why I'm here and that's why I'm doing this podcast, is to benefit as many people as possible. Millions and millions of Americans have suffered from type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, and continue to suffer. So if we can benefit them in any way, shape, or form with this podcast, I want to do that. So please share it with your friends. Get on iTunes and give me a 5-star rating.
If you liked it, 5 stars, and then write a little blog about it, or a little give me, say something about it, so other people can find it that you're not sharing it with. You know, the more people who listen, the more benefit we can do for others, and you can be a part of that. And I'm asking you to be part of that. So let's share this podcast as often as possible. Thank you very much, and good wishes to you.